I'm here to represent the American Medical Association. The title of my talk is AMA's Response to the Diabetes Epidemic. I do not have any financial conflicts of interest. It's well known to the audience here that the incidence of diabetes is growing annually. And if current trends continue, more than 40 million people will have diabetes in the next 20 years. But I think you need to take a look at this graphic just to understand exactly how big that count is. It's staggering. And if you look back at 2009, the number really was reasonable. It was 20 million, which is still pretty high, but there's a doubling that'll happen by 2034. What does this mean for physicians in practice? Many people have developed models to estimate the burden of diabetes in a practice. This is one such model that projects that over the next 5 years, a typical large clinical practice, this is a large practice, say 100,000 patients, but this same statistic could be applied to any practice, whatever size, up to a 57% increase in the number of patients with diabetes. And I'd like for people who are physicians among the audience and those who are not to imagine exactly how much effort it takes to look after patients with diabetes today, and imagine if that burden were to increase by about a half. That would be overwhelming for the primary care infrastructure in our nation. Before I go further, I wanted to make certain that we agree on some of the terms that I'll be using today. And one of these is pre-diabetes. This is a reversible condition in which plasma glucose levels are higher than normal, but not yet high enough to be considered type 2 diabetes. What's interesting is that people with pre-diabetes already have elevated cardiovascular risk. These people obviously are also up to five times or more higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. What is staggering is that about a third of the U.S. population appears to fall within this cutoff based on the NHANES data. One of the most interesting developments in the last month has been the issuance of screening guidelines for abnormal glucose and type 2 diabetes. I'd like to draw your attention to a couple of things on this slide. First is that it's not just screening for type 2 diabetes, it's screening for abnormal glucose and type 2 diabetes. And the abnormal glucose here is terminology for pre-diabetes. The other very important thing to note in this recommendation, which was published in Annals just last week, is that the next step after screening of referring people with abnormal glucose to intensive behavioral counseling interventions is captured in the body of the recommendation. And this is unusual to have the next step beyond screening to be identified in the actual recommendation itself. But I think the statistics are so staggering, the problem is so huge in magnitude that this was acknowledged by the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force. This is a grade B recommendation, which to me signals that coverage for these preventive services should now be a mandate for health insurance providers. Interestingly, the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations followed on the footsteps of the Community Preventive Services Task Force recommendations. And rather than present the evidence in detail, I just wanted to highlight that the systematic review performed for the Community Preventive Services Task Force concluded that combined diet and physical activity promotion programs are effective at decreasing diabetes incidence and improving cardiometabolic risk factors in people at increased risk. And these are two separate concepts. Not only does the risk for diabetes go down, but cardiometabolic risk factors such as hypertension and hyperlipidemia are also impacted positively. And based on this review, obviously, the Preventive Services Task Force recommended combined diet and physical activity programs for people at increased risk of type 2 diabetes. So what do physicians need to do with all this information? I think it's good to begin by asking, what are the challenges faced by practicing physicians in light of this evidence? Obviously, physicians and care teams alone cannot address the healthcare needs of 86 million people. That is too much to ask of healthcare professionals. Physicians and care teams do not have the time to counsel patients about lifestyle changes in their office during a 15-minute visit, or to do it in a measured and objective way over several visits. Furthermore, physicians and care teams do not have enough information about community-based resources for diabetes prevention. And finally, an area where the AMA can make a contribution, the social determinants of health need to be addressed. And very important point is that inequities in healthcare delivery need to be taken into consideration as well. I'd like to spend a few minutes talking about what the AMA is doing to address these challenges. First and foremost, we are collaborating with government as well as with community-based organizations to address diabetes prevention at the population level. That is a core part of our mission, and we continue to do that. We're also working with practices out in the community, and you'll hear from one of them, in developing, testing, and then using their help to disseminate materials and tools to help clinical practices identify people who are high risk and then link them with community-based programs. The AMA also has a bridging or a convening role in bringing together clinical practices and community-based organizations committed to diabetes prevention. And finally, I'm proud to say we have joined hands with several organizations and government partners to improve the social determinants of health and to address inequities in healthcare delivery. I'm going to just use one slide to highlight the collaborative work that we have done with YMC of the USA, and then my colleague, Ms. Heather Hodge, will elaborate on that. There, you'll hear about the details from Heather, but there was a Healthcare Innovation Award received by YMC of the USA, I'd say about 3 years ago, from Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. And the purpose of that was to provide the diabetes prevention program in 17 communities spread out across 8 states that are highlighted, and the initials are on the left of the slide here. The AMA role in this grant was to help connect clinical practices with local YMCA-based programs, and the second important role was to support clinical practices in screening people at risk, identifying them, and then referring them to local prevention programs, in this case, the YMCA-based diabetes prevention programs. In this effort, the AMA worked closely with state and local medical societies to make this happen. Beyond that, the AMA, as I mentioned, is working closely with the federal government, with the CDC, in particular the National Diabetes Prevention Program housed in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And we are using a 5-pronged approach to address diabetes nationally. And the 5 elements of this approach are to raise awareness, both among the public and clinicians and other health professionals, of prediabetes as a treatable condition. To work on increasing health plan coverage, both public and private health plan coverage for diabetes prevention programs, and to work with employers to consider the option of offering diabetes prevention services as part of wellness benefits. The CDC is committed to increasing the availability of programs all across the nation to meet the local population health needs. The AMA has a significant role in supporting clinical practices and screening for prediabetes and diabetes and facilitating testing and referrals to programs. Finally, all of this has to come together to support increased enrollment in diabetes prevention programs that are recognized by the National Diabetes Prevention Program at the CDC. What this means is that when a physician colleague of mine sends a patient to such a program, they have the reassurance that the federal government, the CDC, is acting as a quality assurance mechanism to make sure that programs are recognized and based on the best available evidence. In order to facilitate this work, the AMA and CDC jointly launched a website and a marketing effort directed at public health agencies and clinicians earlier in the year, in the spring of 2015. The website associated with this effort is called preventdiabetesstat.org, and that has all the tools and materials, not just for clinical practices, but also for public health practitioners and employers and other stakeholders in this area. This is a screenshot of the website. I wanted to spend a minute talking about the tools that the AMA has developed jointly with clinicians out in the real world and also with input from patients and other stakeholders. These really are tools to help primary care physicians who are committed to diabetes prevention engage in a conversation with their care teams and their colleagues, to be able to identify high-risk patients efficiently and effectively, to educate and engage patients around diabetes prevention, to connect medical practices with programs, to facilitate referrals to local programs, and clarify diabetes prevention program structure and expectations, which is an important task. In order to help with some of this work, the AMA is hosting a CME module, which is only about 45 minutes long and gets 1 hour of free CME, which is an introduction to our tools and resources. This informational material is accessible to anyone. They do not have to be an AMA member. You simply need to provide your name and email address to register, and then you can download the materials, and if you're a nurse, you can print a certificate and supply it to your nursing organization for continuing nursing education credit. So it's not intended solely for physicians, but for healthcare professionals and frankly for anyone who's willing to access the website. I want to end by speaking a little bit about the vision for this kind of effort and why is it important. I think I mentioned that the burden of diabetes is increasing so much that physicians need to look outside the four walls of the practice for support in addressing this great public and clinical health challenge. And I think the nexus of the message here is we need to build practice community linkages or community clinical linkages. And this is an example from one of the practices we work with in the Twin Cities area in Minneapolis, St. Paul, where we work with a physician and also work with the YMCA locally to set up two-way communication and also a stream of referrals going into the local YMCA. Thank you very much, and I'll take your questions at the end along with everyone else.